Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I'm your host, Mike Cutler. It's a thrill to join you every Friday at the end of the week to play the game of catch-up and take a look at some of the crazy stuff that's going on. And by the way, you don't have to dig very deep or very far in this wacky era to find crazy stuff. But today we have a very special program. And I just want to start out by telling you that I have two wonderful guests scheduled to join me today. John Rowland will be coming on the program. For those of you from the New York area, the name John Rowland should be quite familiar, should be a familiar name, because he was for many years the anchor on the local Fox 5, Channel 5 television news broadcast in New York. Did an amazing job of covering news in the New York area. John is truly a journalist in the true sense of the term journalist, a real professional, and he took part in a documentary film that I am also very proud to have been in, and that documentary is called They Are Coming to America. The director and the force behind that film, Dennis Michael Lynch, will also be joining me shortly to talk about the film, to talk about what he discovered. I'm thrilled to have played a small part in this movie. But I will tell you, this guy has, as we like to say in Brooklyn, some real chutzpah. He went down to the Mexican border, put his life on the line for 3 days, 3 nights, to try to see firsthand the madness that passes for border security. When we listen to Janet Napolitano, the head of DHS, the agency I've come to call the Department of Homeland Surrender, tell us how secure the border was, I think Dennis Michael Lynch will have something different to say about that. For those of you joining me for the first time, I welcome you. If you're not familiar with me, I am a retired senior special agent of what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Spent my entire career in New York, all 30 years of it. I began as an immigration inspector, did that for 4 years, starting over 40 years ago, back in October 1971. For one of those 4 years, I acted as an adjudications officer. I decided whether or not to grant residency to aliens based on being married to United States citizens and spouses who had green cards. And then in 1975, I became a special agent, criminal investigator. I rotated through all the divisions within the investigations branch. 1988, I was assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division of DEA. And then in 1991, I was promoted to the position of senior special agent and assigned to the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. Throughout my career, I've been very fortunate because I got to go on all the rides. I worked with the FBI, DEA, ATF, U.S. Customs, the IRS, the Marshals Service, the list goes on. I've worked with local and state police, and I've worked with foreign governments, including the Israeli National Police, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, British Customs, New Scotland Yard, even with the Japanese government. So I have seen immigration from a very unusual, all-encompassing perspective. I'm currently very proud to be a senior fellow with an organization known as Californians for Population Stabilization. They go by the initials CAPS, C-A-P-S. Their wonderful website is capsweb.org. A great website. They do wonderful work. And, you know, although the name Californians is in it, don't misunderstand. Their concerns are the concerns that should be that of every American living in every one of our nation's 50 states. This nonsense that there are four border states is just that, nonsense. Any state that has a seaport or an international airport is also very much a border state. And in fact, nearly half the illegal aliens in our country are not believed to have entered the United States by running our borders, but by entering through ports of entry. And then in one way or the other, violating the terms of their admission into the United States, which is in fact what the terrorists who so savagely attacked our nation on September 11th, 2001 did. So I urge you to please go to their website, capsweb.org. If you're not familiar with my website, probably you are if you're listening to my program, but just in case, my website is Michael Cutler, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. And I've been doing what I've been doing for more than a decade, ever since 9/11, ever since I witnessed the ashes landing on my home from the conflagration of what came to be known as Ground Zero. I realized that I had to go out there and provide the perspectives that I've acquired in my 30 years attempting to enforce the immigration laws, because this is such an important issue. I see we have one of our guests on. Let me go answer and... Hi, this is Mike Cutler. Who would I have the privilege of speaking with this evening? Uh, Let's see how we're doing here. Hello. Okay. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, this is Mike Cutler. Who's calling, please?
Mr. James.
Okay. I'm going to put you on hold, sir. I'm expecting a guest to be calling in, so please stand by.
All right. Thanks.
I don't know why we're having a problem bringing my guest on, but I'm trying to bring him on. The issue that we're confronting, though, in the United States today is a total unwillingness by our government to really address the issues that they really need to address in order to make certain that our country protects itself. That's really wherein lies the biggest part of the problem. Let me see if we can... Hello? Hello? Okay. Well, I guess we lost our caller. Hopefully he will get back with me momentarily. You know, the problem that we really face, though, again, I have to keep saying this, is that for decades, our government has failed to enforce the immigration laws and do what is essential to make certain that our borders are secured, that the immigration laws are enforced, and that's something that's not happened. And that's why the film that Dennis made, They Come to America, is so incredibly important for all of us, to make certain that we really and truly get what we're paying for as taxpayers, secure borders, an immigration system that that really honors us. Let me try this again. Hello.
Mike?
Yes.
Hey, Mike, it's Dennis.
Dennis Lynch. Everybody, here he is. This is Dennis Michael Lynch. He is the director and the force behind They Are Coming to America. Thank you so much for coming on my program, Dennis.
No problem. Sorry, I was trying to dial in. There was something going on. So anyway, sorry I'm late.
That's okay. But, that's okay. You know, technology. I used to have a sign over my desk that said, to err is human, to really foul up, you need a computer. So here we are.
Yep, there we go. So, and I have I hate to start off by correcting you, but the title of the film is They Come to America, not
They're
Coming.
Oh, sorry.
No,
yes,
it's okay.
I apologize.
No, that's fine. Only for the sake of the website, if anybody wants to go there, that's what it is. It's theycometoamerica.com.
Okay, that's fine. And I apologize. Theycometoamerica.com. Please make a note of it, folks. Very important documentary. Let me start out by asking you, how did a kid like you from Long Island get caught up in this whole business?
Boy, do you mean illegal immigration?
Well, the whole business. I know you did a career change. I think the audience would be fascinated to get the short version of how you came to become a movie producer and director and what motivated you.
Oh, you know what? Actually, that's a great question because it sort of ties into this movie in a way. Unfortunately, I was downtown Manhattan on the day of 9/11, and I was early 30s at that point, doing a lot of corporate work, all entrepreneurial kind of stuff, doing very well financially, but I never really liked what I did. So when you see the people on television running from those towers, I'm one of those people on TV.
Wow.
And the next day I decided, after seeing what I had seen, that I wanted to make a change and do what I always dreamt of doing, and that is making films. So I went to film school for about 5 weeks, and that was all I needed as far as I was concerned.
Is that why you call your company Midlife Productions?
Yes, it is. It is. My production company is Midlife. You know, I have a company called TV360, which is the big company, which is it's all freelance videographers and people who are affiliated with film in one way or another. And I used all those people in this film. And then just for my own sense, my own production company, in terms of if anybody were to grab me by myself, it's Midlife Productions. But yes, that's where it came from, because at Midlife, you know, I was 38 when I actually was ready to make my first film, and this is my second one. And boy, you know, you want to ask the question how I got involved in illegal immigration and making this movie. I think that if there's such a thing called the documentary gods, they threw this into my lap because I'm the only one who would have been naive enough to make it.
Well, I have to tell you, I've been in a couple of other documentaries, but the job you did is absolutely phenomenal, I have to tell you. I think we may have John with us right now. Hang on one moment.
Okay.
Hi, this is Mike Cutler. Who's calling?
Hey, Mike. John Rowland here.
John Rowland, how are you? Dennis is already on with us. Thank you so much for joining us. I have to tell you, it's a privilege to have you on my program. I've been a huge fan of your work as a journalist for the longest time and loved what you did in the film.
Well, listen, thank you very much. But my work as a journalist and my work in the film pales in comparison to what you and your colleagues do for our country every single day of the week, of the year. So my hat's off to you, Mike, and your colleagues.
Well, thank you so much for the kind words. You know, we're trying to be the best Americans we know how to be. Dennis was just telling us a little bit about how he got into the middle of all of this, but I just want to let him run with that ball for a moment, and then we'll get right back to you, John, if that works.
Go right ahead. I'm happy to sit here and listen.
Okay, excellent. All right, go ahead, Dennis.
Yeah, so anyway, I was saying if there was documentary gods, they threw it in my lap, basically, because I was naive enough to think that, this would be a great and easy movie to make. And it turns out to be it has been easily the most challenging thing I've ever done in my life on every level. I had no idea of how big and how broken this whole issue is. And it's... it's been 18. I think it's now 18 months, and I'm just floored about how it is that illegal immigration got to where it is right now.
Well, you know, it's the old story about if you let a little leak in your roof go, in the beginning you say, well, I'll just put a little bucket under it. This isn't a big deal. What happens if you let that roof continue to leak long enough is it will bring the house down.
Yep.
And that's what's been happening here. But this isn't only neglect. You realize that there's so many people feeding at the trough. I don't know if you know this, Dennis, but there's an organization that puts out a quarterly magazine, The Social Contract. I just wrote an article, pretty extensive. It's over 30 pages long, or at least it was when I sent it to them. They're going to be publishing it in a couple of weeks about the profiteers of illegal immigration. My article is the lead article, and I entitled it Immigration, the Modern Day Gold Rush. So I don't think it's just benign neglect. I think there's a lot of greedy people out there that are filling their pockets mightily on a daily basis. And then it runs the gamut when you look at all the players involved who are making out literally and figuratively like bandits on the issue.
You know, there was a couple of things just in that statement you said that reminds me of different aspects of the movie that we filmed along.
Uh-huh.
No, we have probably 100 hours of footage. You can only use an hour and a half in a film, and I would say I don't want to let people get off the hook. But I will say this: that a lot of the guys, the American guys who hire these people, they do so because they're trying to make an extra couple of bucks for themselves because. The insurance and workers' compensation and everything else in terms of hiring American guys starts to add up in such a way that it cuts them from being able to really make, I don't want to say a substantial living, but the living that they need to make in order to be comfortable. So what do? They turn to the illegal labor, and, on the surface, it looks like they're saving themselves a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
What these guys don't think of is that it's really a temporary savings because they're paying for it on the back end. They're paying through their taxes. They're paying through their health care. And when I sat there and I would explain this to these guys, you would see that these are honest men for the most part. These are honest men who are sort of like feel like they have no choice but to be dishonest. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it strikes kind of close to home for me. I mean, this wasn't a big issue when my dad was alive. My dad died of lung cancer back in 1967. He worked in the Navy shipyards during the Second World War, but he was a plumber. And what we're seeing with the day laborers, however, is that they are supplanting a lot of American tradesmen. And the other issue, and we touched on it in the film, if you remember, is that when you hire illegal aliens, you're not certain about the identity of these people, so you may well also be having criminals work for you who are fugitives in other countries.
Well, look, so I mean, you in the film alone, you have the one woman who whose daughter was murdered
right.
by an illegal immigrant who she worked with for months, but there
yep.
was no E-Verify program ran. You know, there was no background check done,
mm-hmm.
and here it is, they're working with somebody they have no idea about. And like you said in the film, you know, the greatest cost to America because of illegal immigration is lives.
Yes, and you know, the immigration laws were designed to accomplish two fundamental goals, and lots of people don't know this. I don't know if you know this. I don't know if I had mentioned it in the filming, because it becomes a blur after a while. But prior to the Second World War, the responsibility for enforcing and administering our immigration laws fell to the Labor Department. Because the concern back then was that if you flood the labor market with lots of cheap foreign workers, you will displace American workers and erode working conditions and wages. In fact, the meatpacking industry is a poster child for it. 10 years ago, the folks that worked in the meatpacking industry made $18 an hour. Today, they make about $8 an hour because mm-hmm. they're hiring illegal aliens. So what do we do with Americans who can no longer support themselves or their families, even though they are talented tradesmen, will undoubtedly do better quality work than some day laborer who doesn't know which end is up. He's just there to use brute force wherever possible. It's a very crazy situation, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's a situation where really nobody at the end of the day wins. You know, and that, and no matter whose perspective you're really looking at or through, it's the illegal immigrants are here. Obviously, they're making a lot more money than they could if they were at home. Most of these people are not criminals. They're most if you remove the fact that they broke our immigration laws, they're not here to commit crimes. They're here to make money.
I would actually disagree on one point though. That many of them commit identity theft, which is why identity theft has become the biggest growth industry. How many commercials are there on TV for the companies that promise to protect your identity from being stolen?
Listen, good point. And you know, the people who I interviewed, I mean, they didn't come out to me necessarily and say, yes, I stole a Social Security card. In fact, to even make it, you know, it'd almost be easier if they said that. But the ones that I interviewed, they said, no, we don't have a Social Security card. We don't need one. We have a tax identification number. So the government actually issued
It's complicit.
Them,
yeah, the government
yeah,
is
a
complicit.
A federal identification number, but then they say, hey, listen, you can't work. It's illegal to work here. So it's very, very contradictory. And, you know, ultimately, like I said, everybody in this game loses. And it's really, really just a temporary win for the guy who hires the illegal and thinks that he's saving himself some money. Let me just say this part, and I'd like to hear John jump in onto this.
I was just going to say, let's get John in on the conversation.
Yeah, well, I'm going to put something out there that I think is very important, because in making this film, I'm not a political guy. I'm not a registered Democrat. I'm not a registered Republican. I've never been into politics, and I have no message to sell politically with this movie. Okay, my entire focus was to just tell the story and let's see the truth of, you know, what's behind the curtain, so to say.
Uh-huh.
Now, I asked a lot of illegal immigrants, have you ever seen 15, 16, 17, 20-year-old boys mowing their own lawns? And they said, no. I said, what do you see them doing? He says, I see them texting, I see them at the beach, I see them playing video games. You know, when I was a kid, all I did was do those sort of jobs. If I didn't do those sort of jobs, my father got all over me.
You
so,
betcha.
So there is a certain level of responsibility that we all need to take. It's just not the illegal immigrant who is sneaking through the border and we have our hands up. You know, we're causing a lot of this problem on our own.
No argument.
Let me jump in this point, Dennis, as what you were saying. I was struck by how many people that we talked to. You know, you always hear that they are coming here and they want to become citizens and they want to have a better life. However, how many of these guys told us, we don't want to stay here. We want to send the money back home. They think that Americans are fat and lazy and that we are raising fat and lazy kids. One guy said, I don't want my children to grow up here. You people are a bad example. I'm going to take the money. I'm going to go home. As soon as I get enough money, I'm out of here. They don't want to become Americans. I don't want to say all of them. But I was amazed at that. I thought everybody wanted to come here and stay here. And that's not the case at all.
No, and you know, I found that as an agent. I'll tell you a fast, very funny story. When I was a kid, when I was an inspector at the airport, I had bought a used Jag Roadster. I wish I still had the car, but it did eat me out of house and home. I thought it was an airplane. The wheels were off the ground so often in the repair center. But wherever I went, it attracted attention. Then I pulled into a gas station. The guy pumping gas turned out to have been a Greek seaman who jumped ship. And I started to just chat with him to figure out who he was. Now, I wasn't an agent, but I was an inspector, and I was working for the INS. And I said, well, you must love being in America. He said, no, he said, I hate America. He said, I wouldn't even want my wife and children to come for vacation. I'm here for one reason and one reason alone, to get as much money as I can, as quickly as I can, and never see this country again. And this was back around 1972, 1973. I have to
and
tell you, my eyes were wide open when I heard that.
Yeah, mine too, and that's a story that you don't hear from today's through today's media, Mike. And one of the problems that I have today with my ex-colleagues is that nobody's asking the tough questions anymore. Just a very, very quick example. The other day, Senator Schumer in New York had a news conference begging Saudi Arabians to pump more oil. Now, at the same time, he voted against that pipeline that runs from Canada down to Houston, where the Venezuelan tankers come in and unload their oil that we buy from Cesar Chavez. We give Chavez, a cruel dictator,
an enemy of this country,
about $30 billion a year. The oil that would come from Canada is just about the same amount. So instead of buying from a friend, an ally, and a neighbor, we chose to buy from an enemy and a dictator. Now,
and he's worse than that. Let me tell you, you're mentioning Hugo Chavez. It's funny how...
Hang on. Let me just finish my point.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Nobody at that news conference asked Senator Schumer about that. Nobody raised that issue. Nobody said, well, then, why did you vote against the... Nobody asked him... Now, maybe they didn't know. My guess is, number one, they didn't know. And number two, they didn't have the cojones to ask him. The journalists today are just not asking the right questions.
Well, I agree. And you know, let's go one step further. Hugo Chavez is host or playing host to unknown thousands of Iranian shock troops, the Quds.
Yes,
and we've
exactly.
seen where Ahmadinejad has been threatening that if Israel attacks their nuclear facilities, that they will attack America. Well, you know, there are terrorist training camps in the tri-border region of Brazil, right? We have the president, meanwhile, a month ago saying, let's give Brazil visa waiver status. We have Hugo Chavez hosting these terrorists and these troops in his own country, and we're doing everything we can to financially bolster that country that's our enemy. Is that nuts?
$30 billion a year in oil alone we give them, and we just gave Brazil millions and millions of dollars and told them to drill for oil, and President Obama said, we want to be your biggest customer. I mean, and again, the Washington press corps, they sit there and it becomes inbred after a while, and everybody cozies up to everybody else and it becomes a club, and you're almost afraid to ask the tough question because you'd almost be ostracized.
And you know, we even see this when we're dealing with members of Congress. I was in a very uncomfortable position with Congressman Lamar Smith, who chairs the House Judiciary Committee. And I've always been a big fan of Lamar Smith. He's always done the right thing. I did my first congressional hearing for him way back May 20th of 1997. Again, you go to my website, michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org, you can see the transcript and so forth. But he comes up with a bill, H.R. 2885, mandatory E-Verify, which sounds wonderful, but it would preempt the states from enforcing the immigration laws at a time when the Supreme Court has been ruling in favor of states' rights. And someone said to me, well, you know, if he's irritated with you, and this was somebody on the Hill, don't blame them for being angry with you because you're being disloyal for not backing his legislation. And I said, wait a moment. How can I be disloyal to legislation if I think that a congressman, no matter how much I'm a fan of the work he has done in the past, if I think he makes a mistake, shouldn't I be calling him on it and saying, you know, this is bad legislation? And they said, no, that's not how Washington works. In Washington, you're either loyal to a member of Congress, meaning you support every piece of legislation he writes, or you're going to have a problem. And I heard this from a Democrat, by the way, because I've been working with both sides of the aisle. Now, think of how crazy that is, that we're supposed to be blindly loyal to a person who is writing legislation that we disagree with. Understand
yes, how, I
fouled,
know. Well,
how fouled up is that, John?
It's also a system that needs to be a little adjusted. But we don't have, Mike, we don't have the type of statesman that we used to have when you and I were growing up. We don't have the Humphreys, the Dirksons. We don't have
even
those
the Goldwaters. I mean, you know, Goldwater was.
We don't have the Goldwaters. You know, whatever side of the aisle you went, they used to look over the horizon and look at what was best for the country. Now they just look to their next election to get reelected, and the news media just sort of tags along, and they don't nip at their heels the way they used to and the way we should today. It is the fourth estate is just not doing its job anymore.
They've become a lapdog.
Yes. They have, unfortunately.
Amazing. Dennis, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I'm listening to what you were just saying about the politicians, and I go back to the movie. One of the scenes that I love the most and the feedback we've gotten so far from the people we've allowed them to watch the movie is when John goes up against the two candidates running for governor in Florida. And the other night I was on another radio show, and that woman who was hosting the show was actually from Florida, and she had said to me, you know, Governor Scott, who the Republican who won the election, he ran the entire time on the fact that he was going to push hard for E-Verify to be a state mandate. Okay. And
mm-hmm.
When we were finished with the film and we started editing the film, which was almost about a year after John and I had filmed down in Florida, I said to John, because John lives in Florida, I said, John, has anything happened since Scott has won the election? So John actually wrote a letter to Scott's office, and we got back that he has not proposed nor signed any legislation whatsoever for anything regarding illegal immigration. So, you know, when I hear something like that, unfortunately, that confirms to me why it is that I have not been voting and why I think a lot of people don't vote, or they're just at this point throwing their hands up in the air. Because that's the one thing about the film. I keep on hearing back from person after person after person who I've allowed to see it so far. And they say, you know what, the thing we love about it is that you just seem like to be like a normal guy, and I connect with that. And all the frustrations you have are the same frustrations I have. And I just had a guy who watched this film from Nebraska. I mean, like I said, I invited last week after we were on Fox News, I got bombarded on our website. I mean, I wasn't even prepared for it. I got bombarded by tens of thousands of people.
Wow.
Who came and asked for a pre-order. They were sending me letters. They were sending me emails. I can't tell you the outpouring that I got. So instead of trying to go down the regular path of having, you know, the Hollywood pundits or the Hollywood critics come in and take a look at my movie and do all the things that usually everybody does, I wanted to go against the grain because I really don't care what the New York Times has to say about the film. I care more about what Joe Blow has to say about the film. So one of those Joe Blows is a guy from Nebraska who sent me an email and said, I would love to critique your film. And he came back and he said to me today he had to continue to stop the film while he was watching it because he was getting so choked up that the America he now lives in allows this sort of thing to happen. And
right.
He said it was so real, and he was watching it all happen, and he could tell that there was nothing fancy about the editing, and I didn't cut somebody off when they were middle of sentence. And he just said, this is, you know, actually he said, you guys would know this, it's an older show, Joe Friday.
Sure,
now, that's
just the fact.
Before my time.
Dragnet,
that he used to just say, ma'am, just the facts, ma'am, just the facts.
Just the facts.
And
Joe Friday. Well, one of the
problems
that we've had, Dennis, and I don't know if you mentioned this to Mike, is because we went down the middle, as Fox says, fair and balanced, which nowadays means conservative, even though it's objective, because the press has gotten so liberal. But because we went down the middle, we've been rejected by every film festival in the country. Because it's not slanted toward the left and makes the illegal alien situation, paints them very sympathetically and paints them as, oh my goodness, these poor people, what are we doing to them? We don't paint them as villains. We don't paint them as sorrowful characters. We just go down the middle and we tell it like it is. And because most of these film festivals are run by liberal artists, nobody wants to show our film.
You know what's remarkable?
And, you know, I'm gonna back that for listeners that you have that aren't familiar with film festivals. I'm gonna back that up with something where you just it just makes you completely scratch your head. Okay.
Okay.
Film festivals, they're ran on very small and tight budgets. Okay. So for them, you know, they get films from all over the world, and they try to show things that they think are going to draw in audiences. And when you get a local filmmaker from a film festival, so in other words, I live in East Hampton. When the Hamptons International Film Festival gets a film from me, I mean, unless it's a pornography, they take it. And why do they take it? They take it because they know I'm going to draw a lot of people locally in to go see that film. Now, when you add a second component to that, in the sense that the film was actually shot in the hometown, so in other words, not only did I make a film, but I made a film in my own backyard, they doubly do it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We were in Phoenix, and we shot all the stuff that's going on in the Sonoma Desert with the drug trafficking. Phoenix turned me down.
Wow, you're kidding.
No, I got turned down by my own, you know, I got turned down by Tribeca. It's in my own backyard. We film half of this film in Florida. We identify how bad things are in Florida, where Americans cannot get jobs, not because necessarily somebody else is taking the job, but because they don't know how to speak Spanish. I got turned down by two different film festivals in Florida.
I just want to ask you a question before I lose the opportunity and the thought. Want to know how you grew the cojones, or had the cojones, frankly, to go onto the Mexican border as you did and put your rear end on the line in a way that I thought was astonishing.
Well, I mean, if you really want the truth, I'll tell you the truth.
Want the truth. I can handle the truth.
How did I get those cojones? I'll tell you right now. I'm more afraid, no joke, of a spider climbing on me when I'm sleeping. I'm kidding. I like telling this story. When I was, it's a little sad, but I mean, when I was 12 years old, my father had a business in a very, very bad part of Queens.
Okay.
And back in those days, we had an alarm system, but the alarm system didn't tie into the police or whatever it was. So we'd always get the call at the house at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. People were in his place. They were stealing tools all the time. So my father would take me at 12 years old into this black warehouse where you'd go in. I'd go with a baseball bat. So,
oh, my God.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know what? You do that 4 or 5 times in your life, and you start to realize that, you know, yeah, if there's something going to jump out at me, they're going to jump out at me. So I got to tell you something. Was I nervous going up against that? Oh, my God, yes. I felt like I was 12 years old again. But I have to tell you something. The cojones that I had for 15, 20 minutes, I get to go home. Those ranchers, they have to have those cojones every single day. And not just guys, you know, not just guys. There were women. There were women who were on their ranch who, in order for them to take their kids to the school bus, they take them to the school bus, they walk back to the house, they have to go around with a gun before they go back in.
Now, let me ask you a question. You saw what you saw, and then you hear Janet Napolitano, who works for us theoretically. You know, you hire a house painter, they work for us to paint our house. We, the people, in essence, hired this administration, including the woman who heads up the Department of what I call Homeland Surrender, saying, oh, there's no spillover violence coming across the border. If she was listening, what would you tell Janet?
You know what? I'm going to answer that in two ways, Mike, real quick. Last night, Rick Santorum was on TV with Piers Morgan, and Piers Morgan asked Santorum whether or not Mitt Romney was a liar. And he would not say the words, yes, he is. All he would say is, well, he didn't tell the truth. I will tell you this right now, because I am not political and I'm not running for office. She is a liar. Do you understand?
Absolutely.
She is a liar. That is what I would say right now. I'd say you are a liar, or either you're a liar or you clearly cannot see. Because when we were down there for 3 days, I can't tell you how many. There's crossings all over the place.
Yep.
There's crossings all over the place. And let me tell you something. When they're crossing, Mike, they're not running. They're not running like, you know, when we used to pull hop when we were kids and we did something we weren't supposed to do, a ring and run. You ran.
No,
you
there's arrogance to this.
They're not running. And then let me tell you something. The Border Patrol, at nighttime, you sit there, and the Border Patrol comes by, and then they drive away. They go down to their next spot, which is maybe who knows how many miles down, and then they turn around and they go back. They would be spans of 20 minutes in the pitch black dark where there would be no Border Patrol agent at a spot where there's no fence. Nothing. Okay.
Well, and it isn't just people coming to look for work in this country, Mike. That's what's frightening. They found Korans. They found evidence of Chinese people coming across. I mean, God knows how many terrorists are coming up through South America, coming into our country, and heaven forbid we have another 9/11 on our hands.
Well, you know, and that's the point that what people don't understand. And, you know, as an agent, I've arrested thousands of illegal aliens, and I've arrested terrorists in my career. I spent half my career doing narcotics investigations. And what people really need to understand is that if you have somebody like these Iranian shock troops or members of Hezbollah, Hamas, Al-Qaeda, living in Latin America, whether it's Brazil, Venezuela, Bolivia, wherever, after a few years, it's very easy for Muhammad to pass himself off as Miguel. He learns the language. He wears the clothing. He knows the terrain. He has the right dialect. How on earth can you sit across the table from somebody like that who has spent 5, 6, 8 years doing total immersion in Latin America and just by staring at him say, oh, yeah, this guy's Iranian? I got to tell you, as an immigration agent, it doesn't work that way.
Well, that's why we have to wake up. This is not a Democratic, a liberal problem. It's not a conservative problem.
No.
It's not a Republican, Democratic. This is an American problem, and this affects every single one of us, and it's getting worse every single day.
Let me throw another problem.
Go ahead, Dennis.
I want to throw a problem in there, which I think is more important than anything, okay?
Go ahead.
This is not a problem of racism, okay?
No.
I cannot tell you. I mean, I have hired, you know, we talked about before John got on about what my life was like before I started making films. I have had over easily 3,000 employees who have collected a check from me in my lifetime. I can tell you I have hired every single last nationality and religion there is, both women and men. So anybody out there who would want to say that Dennis Michael Lynch is a racist would have a very, very hard time proving that. That being said, I have six little clips on YouTube. None of them indicate anything about racism except for one where a man tells a story. But now I'm being called a racist. I'm being called a racist, and anybody who ever says, you know, illegal immigration is a problem is automatically booked as a racist. And this is not a race problem, because you want to know something, it doesn't matter if it's Chinese or if it's Taiwanese.
Yep.
Or Mexican. These people are coming into our country illegally. We don't know who they are. We don't know what their intentions are, other than maybe, you know, are they coming here to work or are they coming here to do bad? And I can tell you from talking and living down on that border with the ranchers and also with the illegals that those drug cartels are playing a major role in getting people over here. This is not just, like you said, Miguel. Miguel isn't coming over with $20 in his pocket anymore, sneaking in by himself and finding a job in Tucson, Arizona. He's traveling with 20, 40, 50, 60 people. They're all organized by drug cartel and what they call coyotes. And the coyote takes them through the desert, and they all are forced to carry drugs. And then if they do get through, which they do get through most of the time, they're brought into Phoenix. And when they get into Phoenix, the women and the men who travel through, the Miguels and the Marias, if you will, they are sitting in drop houses. They are getting raped. They are being held to gunpoint. And their families are being called back and wherever they are, Ecuador, Mexico, Chile, you name it. And it's being said, send another $5,000. And if you don't send another $5,000, here's what happens. And they take the phone and they put it to the girl as she's getting raped. Can you imagine being the father back in Ecuador listening to that?
Well, actually, I was part of the first anti-smuggling unit in New York, and we started to see that, but not to that extent, back in the late 70s, and it has only amped up since then. And I want to make a point, though, that I think is really important. First of all, your point about not racism, you're completely right. And by the way, we hear this mythology. Well, if politicians want a Latino vote, first of all, it's prejudice and profiling on a scale that if a cop did it, the ACLU would go berserk. To presume that anybody can be would vote predictably because you know the color of their skin or the fact that I'm Jewish or you're Catholic or whatever, how on earth can you make those ridiculous statements without being guilty of prejudice? And why would somebody in the ethnic Latino community want to have criminals come into their community? Look at MS-13, for example, the Mexican cartels. The first order of business for these criminal enterprises is to recruit more members. It's like forming an army. They're out recruiting. If it's a Latino gang, they are not going to recruit white kids or black kids. They're going to recruit Latino kids. And by the way, we see the same thing with Asian organized crime. We see the same thing with the Russian mob. We see the same thing with the Jamaican drug posses. Again, it's not about ethnicity, but it is about ethnicity in terms of how the ethnic groups from everywhere in the world recruit young people inside the United States to participate in these violent gangs and destroy their futures. So I can't tell you in my travels, because I've been all over the country since 9/11, how many people who are of Latino background have come up to me furious, in a rage, that there is a presumption being made that every Latino in America who casts a ballot is foolish enough or dishonest enough to want to see our borders left wide open and our immigration laws made a mockery of.
Mike,
well,
we
have to stop the name-calling. We have to stop the, you're a racist, you're a bigot, you're anti-this,
yep,
you're anti-that. We just have to solve this problem because it is financially, from a human standpoint, lives being lost, families being destroyed. It's just a problem that we have to face up and we have to solve it because it's probably the single most problem that is facing America today that could be the end of this country.
Oh, it could very easily be the unraveling. And there's one other thought I want to make, and I'm sure, Dennis, with what you said, you will agree with this. You know, if you look at the way that illegal aliens are exploited, and I saw exploitation on a galactic scale as an agent, because for about 7 or 8 years I was in a squad where all we did was go to places of employment. And I mean, girls forced to have sex with the boss and people being swindled out of money, working conditions that, wow, I mean, I can't even tell you. It used to keep me awake at night. And to say that you're against this kind of exploitation makes you anti-immigrant. You know, when you look back at the dark era of American history, when slavery was business as usual, could you imagine being accused of being anti-black if you refused to own a slave?
Yeah.
And that's what we're also talking about, because nobody wants to be honest about the exploitation either. If we're honest about this, if we're decent about this, if we're fair-minded, none of this makes any sense, and it's anti-American. It's anti-American for American citizens. It's anti-American for the survival and well-being and safety of our country. And it's anti-American to treat any group of people the way that illegal aliens are exploited. And, you know, if we legalize the millions who are here, two things will happen. And this is important, folks. I wrote a commentary for the Washington Times about 4 years ago. Senator Sessions honored me by quoting me from the floor of the Senate on three separate days. I said that we should really call comprehensive immigration reform what it is, the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act, to give millions of people official identity documents without being able to even know their nationalities, let alone their true names, would be an act of suicide. This is the sort of thing that Al-Qaeda and the other terrorist groups would live for. And
oh, yeah.
Meanwhile, the mythology keeps going, and the other side keeps on changing the language. See, they won't use the word alien because it's not a word of hatred. The term alien is a legal term. It simply means any person who's not a citizen or national. And if you can find an insult in that term, I'll buy you a cup of coffee or a cold beer. The bottom line is it gives clarity to the argument. And if you're pushing a position that's contrary to common sense, decency, law, and reason, then all you have left is either name call or use deceptive language. And that's why the word alien has been all but stricken from the vernacular.
Well, we're just hoping that this film, they Come to America, can be seen by as many Americans. It should be shown in every single school and college in the country. And Dennis really needs to be patted on the back for
absolutely
making a film that it's just amazing the fight that we're getting against people being able to see this this movie. It's really atrocious.
You know, I want to say two things about that in terms of getting the movie out there and about the resistance to it. You know, and for whatever reason, I'm having a one of those brain spells where you can't remember. But I just watched today. There's a big phenomenon going on in the news for the last 2 days about these filmmakers who made a half-hour film about the man over in Uganda who kidnaps children. I don't know. If you haven't heard it, you're going to hear it in the next 2 or 3 days. There have been 70 million people who have watched this film about this man. Yeah, he's one of the number one wanted people in the world. He takes children out and he puts them into their army and he makes them shoot their own parents and whatever. I mean, it's just terrible. And I read a commentary about it today and somebody said, this is a phenomenal film, but it's 15 years too late. This man has already done his damage. And what I will not allow to happen, not as for as long as I could breathe and walk, is I will not allow our film that we have created to be one that is looked at 15 years from now and have somebody say, boy, man, this was a great film. Why didn't anybody look at this 15 years ago? I'm not going to have that happen. And what everybody who has some power in Hollywood and these film festivals, whatever, they are doing everything they can to me to ensure the fact that it's not going to go anywhere. And, you know, John knows me somewhat, other people who know me really well. That is almost like the worst thing in the world you can do to me because now I will spend every minute of my day trying to figure out how I'm going to get it out. And I got to tell you, the social networking sites, I got to tell you something. It's going to change the way everything is done because I have had more people, when I send out these little tweets, you know, and I only just opened this thing up about a week ago, this Twitter thing. Yep. I got 800 people already following me. And if I post something, I watch 6 or 7, 8, 9, 10, 15, 35, 100 different people retweet it. And I say to myself, wow. So what is the story here? This is a matter of us just getting this message out. And I'm telling you, I think we'll have at least a million people see this film by the time that election takes place. No question whatsoever. I don't care if I have to do the craziest stunts possible. That is what we will do.
You mean like go down to the Mexican border?
No, I mean like going into Manhattan with a
sombrero. I'm teasing you, Dennis. You've already been there.
I will get on every TV show, big, small, or medium, and just spend as much time as we possibly need to spend because, you know, look, I had a film before this. We talked about it, right? This King of the Hamptons, and I had people I showed it to, and I got 70% positive, 30% negative. Okay, you know what? That's a pretty good thing, I guess. But in terms of movies, you'd like it to get a lot better than that. I had 100 people watch this film. I've only had one person give me pushback, and that person is an immigration attorney. Okay? So
you're going after his livelihood.
And even that immigration attorney, a person who I respect, he said it's a must watch. He didn't think it was fair. He didn't think it was balanced, but he says the must watch. So everybody else comes back and says eye-opening and well done, and people need to see this movie. We had one guy today. You look on our website, if I could pitch it, theycometoamerica.com.
Absolutely. Pitch it as many times as you want. I have you on because I want your film out there, and I will work as tirelessly as you will to get your – I have to tell you how proud I am to be a part of it.
I appreciate that. And you know, that guy I told you about, the Dragnet, you know, his review was, you know, Dennis should be – and I don't want it to be about Dennis. It could be John. It could be my whole team. It could be you. I don't care. You know, this film should be headlining 60 Minutes, and I believe it will. Okay, so, you know, if enough people start screaming, and I show this to enough people, and we're going to spend a lot of money in making sure that it gets seen, it will have its effect. I really believe it will.
Well, you know, the whole point is that we are limited in what we know about by what the news is willing to broadcast. And John, you know that better than any of us here, because you were a broadcast journalist for so long. So what we're
as I said, today's young people they just aren't asking the right. There are obviously some exceptions, but they're not asking the kind of questions that should be asked. When I asked Scott when he was a candidate down here in Florida, and Alex Sink, who was a candidate for governor, my one question was, what's your answer to the illegal immigration problem? And if you don't have a solution, do you think you deserve to be governor? Well, they started. You would have thought that the looks they got on their faces, and immediately one comes over to me. You'll see it. You'll see it in the movie. They come to America. You'll see it in the movie. Who are you with? Who are you? How dare you? And they actually threw us. The police escorted us away from Alex Sink's. She lost to the now Governor Scott. She lost the election, but she really thought she was going to win. And the police escorted us away because I had the audacity to ask that type of question.
Could you imagine the audacity to try to make a politician accountable? Wow.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely.
You know, let me throw something aside from the politician, something that just hit me. You know, in everybody watches our trailer, and everybody comes back and says the same thing. Wow. I mean, and you know what? Wow. I mean, we really experienced some really interesting, scary stuff. But
by trailer, Dennis, maybe everybody doesn't know what a trailer is.
Yeah, I mean, the movie trailer, you know, the promotional trailer that you see, you know, when you're watching television or whatever. We have a promotional trailer that lasts 1 minute. And, you know, I wish I could say, you know, a lot of times movie trailers take the best of the movie, throw it in 1 minute, and then everybody else is disappointed with the last, you know, the rest of the hour and a half. That's not the case. I mean, just trying to make the trailer alone was a difficult thing because we had so many things to show. I mean, one of the parts that is amazing to me is if you watch the trailer and you'll see the fact that we're down there being chased down at the border. Before that actually took place, and we have it on in the movie, there is a police officer from down in Arizona who warned us, do not go down there by that drug cartel. There are men sitting up in the trees every day, black baklavas, machine guns, people going through. We don't go through there. Okay? So, you know, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to try to discredit our film. They're going to try to do everything they possibly can. And you know what? We have sheriffs and police officers all saying the same thing. And these people scream. They try to talk to Congress. They try to do everything they possibly can. And they are by and large ignored. And I cannot understand, you know, politicians, they don't want to answer John. They don't want to answer a reporter. That's one thing. How can you not answer your own law officials who are sitting there saying, listen, my people are getting shot, robbed,
can I ask you a question?
Stabbed, raped?
All right, let me ask you a question. And we can't prove it, and I'm not making an accusation, okay? I don't want to get a phone call from an attorney or a nasty email. But you really have to wonder if campaign funding isn't coming from the cartels.
Boy, that's heavy.
We didn't find anything at all like that, Mike, but I do know that a lot of...
No, what I'm saying is if you look at the documentary they did about the cocaine cowboys in Florida, they talked about how the politicians were taking money from people that would walk in with brown paper bags and drop it on their desk. And this was back in the late 70s, early 80s. It was a documentary about that. And I'm not pointing at any one politician. All I want to know is if you look at the way business is conducted in Mexico, how the corruption has gotten so unbearable. My concern is that we're going to allow our country to become more like Mexico rather than Mexico seeing America as the role model. America is looking at Mexico as its role model. That's my concern.
Well, we are
concerned. Is that unreasonable?
I don't have an opinion on that, Mike, but I do have an opinion on they come to America, and it's a film that we are working desperately to get to be seen by as many people as possible to try to wake people up, because the people in this country are just not aware of what's going on. They're simply not aware, and the politicians aren't telling them the truth. The politicians aren't doing anything about it, and they only will if there's enough pressure applied. And you need education, you need information to apply pressure, and that's where they come to America. That's what it's all about. Information.
Well, you know, we've spent a lot of time here speaking about the border and the security, and you know that's one part of it. But you know, there's and that's a third of our film, as you know, Mike. But there's another third of the film. Okay, it's really broken into two other thirds. There's the third that really looks at the illegal immigrant and says how good is that life really here, And then the you know, about them having to live underground, and they were all stuck in you know, 20 people living in one home, sharing one bathroom, and and then we look at the cost. Now, one thing that I was amazed by, because I'm a simple guy, you know, to me, 2 and 2 equals 4. If you give me a bigger equation than that, you're going to confuse me. I want to move on. Okay, so I went to a school district where in here in New York where they're struggling. And I asked the superintendent why it is that he had to close the number one school in his district, okay? And it turns out to be that they weren't getting enough New York State aid. They had to shut it down. Now, you have people, Americans, screaming out loud about teachers are making too much money, they have summers off, superintendents are making too much money. I mean, I have news for you. For as long as I remember, and you guys probably remember too, teachers have always had off in the summers. They, you know, they're never going to be rich, but they're never going to be poor. And superintendents always make the most money because, you know what, at the end of the day, who wants to be a superintendent and have to take care of all these schools? I mean, it's you don't want a guy making 30 grand doing that. You want somebody who could get in there and do the right thing. Mm-hmm. That being said, nobody ever talks about the cost of educating the child of an illegal immigrant.
Well, you know what? Interesting point. The Congressional Budget Office did do an analysis and said it costs 20 to 40% more to educate a child who comes to school without fundamental English language skills. What do you think of that?
Now, let me add that. Let me add something to you. Yes, 20 to 40%. That number used to be 50%. And the only reason why it's come down to 20% is because of economies of scale, which is, you know, it's kind of scary in and of itself. But so I asked this man, okay, you know, how many people in your schools speak, you know, English fluently versus how many don't speak at all? And he said there are a lot of our schools where 1 out of 5 kids do not speak English. Then he went on to tell me that he is now, he's not even allowed to ask for a Social Security card when somebody comes and registers. So I asked him how many kids, you know, there's a lot of math going on here, but I asked him how many kids were in a classroom. He said 25. So if there are 5 kids in a classroom who are connected back to parents who are not paying the taxes that you are paying or I am paying, that equals out in his district to $75,000 just in that one classroom to educate those children. So you know, and yes, some of them are Americans due to U.S. you know, birthright citizenship, but that's a different story. The parents aren't paying the taxes; we're paying the taxes, and that's why.
And it isn't just schools closing either. It's hospitals. Local hospitals are closing because they just they have so many people coming in, and they and under our health care in this country. If you don't have any insurance, you go to the emergency room. They must take care of you, and it's here in Florida, in Miami, it's a huge, huge problem. Hundreds of millions of dollars costing the taxpayers to pay for the cost of health care for illegal aliens.
And you know what? It's costing lives too. Because if a hospital closes and someone has a heart attack, or there's a car crash, or someone gets shot. Instead of driving 3 miles to the nearest emergency room, now they may have to go 30 miles to the nearest emergency room.
Got it. You got it. Absolutely.
Yep. Now, Mike, I want to say, in all fairness, okay, because, you know, I made this film, as far as I'm concerned, through an unbiased, fair lens. So I want to say that, you know, obviously there are other reasons why schools are closing down. It's not all because of the illegal immigrants. What I'm trying to point out is that nobody – from, you want to call it the left side, I hear it from the right side sometimes, everybody wants to focus in on the teachers and the superintendents. And yes, there are bad superintendents, and yes, maybe we have too many superintendents, but nobody ever sits there and I never hear anybody sit there and really do the analysis of, wow, you know, we're letting these kids go into school, and if their parents aren't paying taxes, look how much money this is. You know, and then if you do one of those reports, then you're called a racist. And I just do not think, you know, if you go back and saying that America is a business, if you just look at it from a business, and I'm a businessman, so that's the way I have to look at things. If I'm bleeding money out of my school system, and my school system is my business, I'm going to look at all the areas of where they're bleeding. I'm not just going to look at two, because if I find out two areas of bleed, and I don't look at the other one, guess what's going to happen on the next day? I'm still going to be bleeding.
Yep. How many holes do you need in the bottom of the boat for the boat to go to the bottom of the lake?
One. Yeah.
But you see, the government's solution would be to drill a second hole and tell you that the water will go out the other hole.
Well, you know what, Tutu?
Am I right, John?
I have to wrap up a little bit early. But,
sure.
But I'd like to say a few things other than thank you for having us on your show.
No, it's my privilege.
Thank you for being in the film. People always say the remarkable job that you did. John and I really appreciate you giving us the time tonight. I really want people who are listening to understand that this movie is intended not to point blame at illegal immigrants or to point blame at people who are hiring them. This is a film that is supposed to open your eyes based on the fact
that we are just shining a light.
Even though the light may hurt your eyes, we're shining a light, and that is it. What people want to come away from this movie after they watch it, it is completely to them. I never, ever, ever inject my opinion about this matter whatsoever in that film, aside from my opinion is the system is broken.
Well, I think what's really broken, because we hear this a lot, and I'll give you a comment on that. You know, we hear all this thing about comprehensive reform. I came up with something that I call COMPILE, C-O-M-P-I-L-E, and what that stands for is Comprehensive Immigration Law Enforcement. You don't dangle incentives in front of somebody and then tell them, and don't break into my house. Stay out of my house, but if you get to the bedrooms, I've got gold Rolex watches and wonderful diamond rings. You don't do that. When you have presidents and members of Congress, and we've had this from both sides of the aisle, tell illegal aliens that we want to put you on a pathway to citizenship, but don't break into the country. As far as I'm concerned, that statement is a felony because the law says that if you aid or abet, induce or encourage, shield or harbor aliens in violation of law or encourage or aid them to enter the country, you're committing a felony. So when you tell people who should not be here that if you do get here, we want to make you a citizen, then what we've done is to turn America's border into the finish line, and the starter's pistol has been fired, and it's been fired by the people who are supposedly the leaders of our country.
Well, we're just asking people, Mike, like Dennis said, we don't have an opinion. We didn't find any solutions. We just shined a very bright light on a very big problem.
I will say this. Let me add to that what John just said. I always talk about the 100 people I've shown this film to. You know, there are probably 50 around the country that I've never met before. These are people who found us on Fox News. The other 50 are people that I know or friends of friends. These are all intelligent people, very intelligent people, very educated in some cases, doctors, lawyers. I can't tell you how many people come back and after they see this film and say, I didn't know that. I didn't know this. I didn't know that our country takes in 1 million people legally a year. Why don't
over 1.1 million, and that's the immigrants, and it doesn't include the temporary work visas, so-called. Do you know how many non-immigrants come into America every year? Approximately 150 million, and the majority come in without visas under the visa waiver program at a time that they're strip-searching 85-year-old women who want to get on board airplanes.
Well, that's another thing in the film that people always say that they didn't know. When you point out that we have over 5 million people floating around, or we think 5 million people floating around the country who have overstayed or violated their visa, and we have a couple of hundred agents looking for them.
And a president who says that unless you've been convicted of felonies, we want to give you employment authorization, even if you are here illegally.
Yeah. By the way, do you know
what a terrorist does the day before he participates in a terrorist attack? He goes to his job where he's been hiding in plain sight for the last couple of years. We saw that with 9/11. And usually it's a job that provides camouflage and mobility. A cab driver, a bus driver at an airport, a limo driver, an ice cream truck. It's always about providing mobility and camouflage.
You know what, Mike, you nailed on the head. It's why we asked you to be in the film. You did a fantastic job. And I just want to say, and before I jump off here,
okay,
that you know, it is a film that is very, I like to think, is very, very well produced. You know,
let me tell you, it is
the best equipment you could possibly use. I mean, there's nothing cheap about it whatsoever. And I vow that by the end of the year, people will look back and say, well, that was one of the biggest movies of the year.
What is that website again?
TheyComeToAmerica.com.
Easy to remember, folks.
All right. Thanks again, Mike. And John,
Dennis, I want to thank you so much for the film, for giving me an opportunity to get my voice heard. And I consider you a friend and a great American. I think what you're doing is in the best tradition of what Americans have always done, to stand up and have their voices heard and make their voices count. And it's really a privilege to be a part of your project. And I thank you for being a guest on my program tonight.
Hey, listen, I appreciate that. And all those words are kind. And every time somebody says that to me, I have to come back and say the same thing again that I said earlier. Yes, some of the things we did were sort of crazy and brave, and we put ourselves in very, very bad conditions. Thankfully, we caught some of it on camera. But it pales to what these people in Arizona and along that border in those four states are going through on a daily and nightly basis. You do not understand what it's like unless you live it. We lived it for 3 days, and I can tell you that I will never go back into that region again unless I know it is secure, because I would fear that I would not come home.
Yeah, I've been down there, by the way, and I don't think you're exaggerating the dire nature of the situation.
I am not exaggerating.
No, absolutely not.
All right, so I have to jump off, but thanks again.
Dennis, thank you so much. Be well. Talk to you soon. John, I got to tell you, it's a joy and a thrill for me to have you on my program. As I say, I've watched you on TV,
Mike,
for so many years.
Well, it's been our pleasure, and I'm going to leave you with just this one thought that how much we appreciate the work that you've done for our country and that your colleagues are still doing, risking their lives along that border and the work that's done across the country by immigration agents every day, who are in many ways unsung heroes. And the people who watch the movie, They Come to America, will see what a impossible job that a handful of you and your colleagues have compared to the flood that is coming into our country every single day. You're sticking your fingers into a very, very dangerous dike, risking your lives, trying to prevent a problem that is just being totally ignored by our politicians. It's very sad.
Certainly is. John Roland, again, I thank you. I appreciate your work. I appreciate the kind words and the accolades to my former colleagues. Absolutely, they're worthy of them. And, you know, by the way, while TSA has over 60,000 folks working for them, there's fewer than or about 7,000 immigration agents for the entire United States of America, and more than half of them aren't even doing immigration work. They're doing customs work. So when you realize that once people get beyond the border, they're basically home free, it's kind of like having a baseball team not put anybody in the outfield. If you can hit the ball over the infielders' heads, you get an in-the-park home run. And that basically is the way immigration is not being enforced today in the United States.
Well, there's no doubt that it's a broken system, and They Come to America proves it.
Well, thank you so much for your years of dedicated work as a journalist, and especially for the amazing job you did on this film. And thank you for being on my program tonight, John.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Good night.
Be well. Have a great weekend. Folks, I have to tell you, it was really quite a privilege to have those two guys on my program today. I know that there's a couple of people who have been holding for me. Let me just quickly see if we have a couple of callers real quickly before we run out of time. Hi, you're speaking to Mike Cutler. Who's calling, please?
This is Marty.
Marty, how are you? I gather you've been listening to my program for a while.
Yes, I am. In fact, I'm the secret agent for Joe Friday from Nebraska.
I'm sorry I didn't get you on while they were there, but I wanted to make sure that I gave them ample opportunity. Shoot me a correspondence to the website, if you would, and I'll be certain to get that to them.
I will. I just wanted to point out I'm retired senior citizen. I've done some studies in reference to the cost accounting side of it, and it's major even in the little city of Omaha, Nebraska.
This is hammering every city across the country.
Yes.
It's not just about the border state, so-called.
Oh, no. No, I do. I help charities pick up clothing and shoes, and I sell the clothing and shoes to a recycler, and I give the money back to the charities. And a lot of the charities give clothing and shoes and food, and a lot of these people are illegals that come here, have no money, have no way to support themselves. So we kick in. We have many, many people donating.
Understood.
If they knew exactly what was going on, I think it would change their mind, because we're just feeding the church choir
now. What we're doing also, by the way, is we are taking pressure off of Mexico and other countries. They export poverty. They also export the potential for insurrection. Realize that over 10% of Mexicans live in the United States. That's why every time there's a Mexican presidential election, the candidates come to campaign inside the United States. And this isn't just about Mexico. Mexico provides more illegal aliens than any country because of that border that we share with Mexico. Somebody once very aptly said that 2,000-plus-mile border is the only place on the planet where the first world collides with the third world. And this isn't about vilifying Mexican citizens, but does make it clear that America needs to go back to the Mexican government, a government that is really under incredible pressure from the cartels, corruption, and so forth, and make it clear that we will no longer allow this to continue. And maybe the solution is to tell foreign governments, if your citizens come to our hospitals, we're sending you the bill.
I agree.
So
I've learned a lot in the year or two that I've been studying this, and then with the film coming out, it just blew my mind.
Well, I think hold on one moment. I believe that we may have – hold on one second. Dennis, is that you?
Yeah, I wanted to say thank you to Marty.
Marty, Dennis, there you go, guys. Now we've got you both on at the same time.
I just wanted to say my wife, I didn't realize my wife is listening to this in the other room, and I went in and I hear Marty. I said, I got to call in and say thank you to that man. Thank you for your critique. Thank you for taking the time to watch our film.
I'm
glad you found out, Dennis, because I was sitting here saying, my gosh, I wish I had got him on the line while you were on, so here you go.
I'd like to hear in Marty's words. I mean, because we get back all these critiques. I don't read them. They get filtered through Ryan Brown, our co-producer, and all of them are great and they're nice. And I haven't had anybody really write anything so far where I would say, wow, how did they get that out of the movie in terms of a bad thing? It's been all good, which is nice. But then he said, you got to read this one. And I looked at it, and I said, wow, I said, this guy really, he nailed it. He nailed it the way I would have liked to set it myself. So, Marty, do me a favor if you can, because my wife's going to kill me. I got to jump off. I wanted to say personally to you thank you, but we're late for somewhere that we're going. But if you could tell people who are listening what you thought of that of my film, I would appreciate it, because I need as many people talking like this as possible in order for this thing to get out there.
Sure will.
Thanks, Marty. Good night.
Dennis, tell your wife thank you for listening and getting you back on the line with us.
All right, you got it, guys.
Have a great weekend. Enjoy your dinner. Marty, go ahead. In 60 seconds, so what was your take on the film?
Well, the thing that I sent to Dennis was, after reviewing it twice, I couldn't sit through the whole showing. I was boiling.
Yep.
And the fact with your comments and Roy Beck's comments, it got me to thinking is that they're bleeding our schools, they're bleeding our health care, and they're bleeding our community. And without the financial support, they would not be here. So we do have to make those employers realize what it's costing us in our taxes, in our health care costs, all the things that go along with it. And if we don't do that, I think there's a reckoning going to happen. And if we don't expose it, we're going down the wrong road. And we need to get it exposed, and so that's what I'm going to do.
Absolutely. Look, we have to deal with reality. And I think that what his film did, you know, I've been in a number of documentaries, and he did such an amazing job on this film. I really, I mean it from the bottom of my heart. I am very proud to be a part of this film. I think he did an amazing job, and I appreciate your words. I mean, you know, this is so important. And you would think that, and remember, we weren't just attacked in 2001. There were two terrorist attacks carried out in our country in 1993 by terrorists from the Middle East who game the visa process and the immigration program to enter our country and embed themselves, in the words of the, to use the term of the 9/11 Commission, and in fact I provide a testimony to the 9/11 Commission. You could also think of it as hiding in plain sight. So this is really astonishing, and in fact, speaking of the 9/11 Commission, this past week I played host to one of my colleagues from Californians for Population Stabilization, and I took her to see the memorial at Ground Zero, and it took our breath away. It took our breath away. She's from Santa Barbara, California, and we went there, and it really shakes you up to think that these were the buildings. I used to go into those buildings almost daily, and I stood there with this young lady and said, these were buildings that stretched a quarter of a mile into the sky, reduced to rubble, took out 3,000 innocent lives spontaneously, and think of how many more people were sickened, are dying, have died because of their exposure to the toxins. This attack was actually more horrific than what happened at Pearl Harbor. But yet when we were attacked at Pearl Harbor, it took us all of 44 months to build fleets of ships that had never existed before, fleets of aircraft that had never existed, radar installations, even atomic weapons. It didn't matter. Whatever was necessary, we did it, and in just 44 months, it was over. Here we are more than 18 years since the first terrorist attacks. You know, I know Dennis said, well, they did this film about this kidnapper, and it was 15 years too late. Well, it was 18 years ago that we were first attacked, first at the CIA by a guy by the name of Amil Kansi, a Pakistani national who got political asylum by lying on his application. And he repaid America's consideration and kindness and compassion by standing outside CIA headquarters with an AK-47. He opened fire, killed two CIA officers and wounded three others. And just 1 month later, we had the first attack at the Trade Center that killed six people, injured hundreds if not thousands, inflicted a $500 million in damages, and nearly brought one of the towers down sideways, which had it happened, would probably have left lower Manhattan uninhabitable to this day and would have probably killed over 100,000 people. And yet, after that, absolutely nothing, and I mean zero, was done by the Clinton administration to address the vulnerabilities of immigration. And I will tell you that from an immigration perspective, we are more at risk today than we were on September the 10th, 2001. You can't protect your country when you have within your country unknown millions, arguably tens of millions, of illegal aliens whose true identities, backgrounds, and intentions are unknown and unknowable. But meanwhile, our expectations of privacy and freedom under the Fourth Amendment and other provisions of our laws have been gutted, all in the name of national security. How insane is that, Marty?
It's terrible. You know, I'm a Vietnam veteran.
Thank you for your service.
And I had 26 weeks of training. Okay, I don't know how many weeks of training you had, but a lot of us went over 26 of training, and we put an M16 in our hand, and we fought. And it seems like it's a political game that they're playing today, that they can't correct some of these things, like you say, in 44 months. I mean, World War II was not a hiccup. And
nope.
It's a shame that our veterans of 26-week training can go over there and fight a war and stand up with these elements and survive, where our political scene ignores our citizens of the United States.
No, I couldn't agree with you more, and the problem is political. The problem is campaign finance. You know, as a federal agent, I was not allowed to accept so much as a cup of coffee from somebody. And you have politicians who can brag. I mean, brag, and their backers standing behind them are clapping like a bunch of trained SEALs when they talk about being the best fundraisers. Marty, could you imagine if I had gone to one of my bosses, let's say Walter, who was one of my all-time favorite bosses, and said, Walt, you should be proud of me because I'm the best fundraiser in the office. How quickly do you think he would have dragged me to a grand jury to explain that statement, that he would have been right for doing it? But meanwhile, the politicians can boast about how much money they're able to fill their campaign coffers with from contributors who, I assure you, are expecting something in return for those massive paychecks.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I may have been born on a Wednesday, but it wasn't last Wednesday.
Well, today's society, the apathy is terrible. That's why we have formed a group. What I'd like to do, and I'll give you my analysis of the film, I would like to break down this film into a seminar and a discussion group and show this to every high school, every college, every group that will let me come in and give a discussion on it. And
well, I'll make you a deal, Marty. You stay in touch with me, and if you want me to come out there, we'll try to work something out. I'd be happy to join you.
I will love that. I will love that.
Well, I'll give you a call when we're off the air, and we'll have that conversation either later today or tomorrow, and I will talk to you about that, because that's what's needed, folks. You know, I always end commentaries that I've written by saying democracy is not a spectator sport, and I mean those words, and I know Marty does also. We have American kids right now getting shot at in Afghanistan. We have many American kids who are home having fought in the Middle East and elsewhere to protect our democracy. And we have politicians who think of the citizenry of this country as an impediment to their goals. Those are the politicians who need to find new employment come November. Would you argue with me?
Well, we have a situation here in Nebraska. We have a gentleman that actually was counselor for the New York University that's originally from Nebraska, has come back here to run in the Senate to replace our senator who is retiring. And, of course, he hasn't been back there for 12 years. He's got the liberal views from the New York area, and he wants to assume that we're going to vote for him. He's got a rude awakening coming to him.
Well, you know, I don't care what party these folks are with. I don't care if they're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. To put it succinctly, you're either with us or you're against us. If you don't believe that the immigration laws need to be enforced and our borders need to be secured and Americans need to get first crack at the jobs and we have to honor the safety, the sanctity of this nation, not by keeping everybody out, but by making certain that there's real integrity to that system. You know, I'll just tell you this quickly, and we're running out of time. I helped Arizona with the insane lawsuit that was filed by the Department of Justice. And I said that during the first 4 years of my career, when in fact I was an immigration inspector, you could say that I had my eye to the peephole on America's front door. And that's what's needed. Not to bar the door and don't let anybody in, not to stop everybody from getting a green card, but let's make certain that we understand just how important border security is. You know, I hate to resort to slogans, but I've always said that a country without secure borders can no more stand than can a house without walls. Our borders are not secure. We literally give away citizenship without any integrity or very little integrity to that entire process. This undermines the safety and the security not only of our nation, but of the lives of our citizens. And, you know, safety first. The government's first obligation needs to be to protect its citizens. If it doesn't, then nothing else that it does is worth the effort. And that's what we need to keep on pushing, and we need to be the best Mythbusters that we can be. And that's why I ask everybody, please go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Please go to Californians for Population Stabilization's excellent website, capsweb.org. I mean, that's really where it's at, as they say. So with that in mind, I'm going to let you go at this point, Marty. I promise I will get back to you probably later on today, and we'll continue the conversation. But I just want to wrap up for my audience. So I thank you for calling in. I thank you for participating in the survey that Dennis had you participate in concerning his film, They Come to America. And I look forward to speaking with you off air.
It'd be my pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Well, folks, here's the deal. The show is wrapping up. We've run long today, an hour and a half almost. I hope you're still with me. I hope you've enjoyed the program. I'm going to make it a point to try to provide you with the best guests I can find to provide perspectives that you're not likely to hear anyplace else. The immigration crisis that confronts America, and believe me, it is a crisis, impacts every challenge, every threat that our nation faces just about. It's not about xenophobia. It's not about any of that nonsense that the open borders folks would tell you it's about. It's about common sense, about making certain that Americans get the jobs, about making certain that we do our best to keep criminals and terrorists from entering our country and doing harm to us. That's what this is about. It's reasonable. It's the way other countries conduct business. There's no reason that we as Americans shouldn't expect the same from our government. I thank you so much for spending your Friday with me today. Hope you join me next Friday again. I'll try to find some more amazing guests, certainly the two gentlemen who joined me today and our caller, Marty. I hope they were thought-provoking. I hope that they motivate you to take action and get involved in our government, get involved locally, get involved on the state level, get involved on the federal level. Please, folks, I'm counting on all of us to be the best Americans we can be, and the best way to do that is to live up to that concept that democracy is not a spectator sport. I thank you for joining me. I wish you all a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.